are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, July 24th, 2017. My name is Michael Brooks. This is a Michael Monday on the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America. Downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Benjamin Mankiewicz of Turner Classic Movies and the Young Turks. Goodbye, Sean Spicer. Hello, Scaramucci. Republicans still lying about health care. CBO scores, as Chuck Schumer indicates that maybe, as part of their quote-unquote better deal, Democrats are ready to move in a more progressive direction on health care. And little Jared Kushner testifying that he didn't collude, even as more information comes out about his relationship with real estate and Russian oligarchs. U.S. military projecting a post-hegemonic world in the 2030s. Is there a Xi and Putin romance that is more important than the supposed Trump and Putin romance? We are going to be putting, in addition to all of the devastating environmental and human and broader effects of it, we're putting future generations into hundreds of trillions of dollars of debt by doing nothing about the climate crisis. The UAE, though, is moving towards renewable energies. And the Republicans on the Hill are starting to freak out. We have to get this together, they say, as their agenda, the big long-term strategic agenda of making America poorer, sicker, and dumber, is getting shakier and shakier after the failure so far of gutting Obamacare. Looks like they're having trouble with tax giveaways for the rich. And when that's all said and done, what else do they have besides executive signings making it easier to pollute and for oil companies to engage in bribery overseas? Republicans worrying. Hamptons fundraisers, the old Democratic elites still think that the same old ways will work. And why? Bernie Sanders really is most likely the strongest candidate so far in 2020. All that and more on today's Majority Report. We are having technical difficulties, everybody. Not technical difficulties that will matter on your end, but a very basic, a very primordial, very primal technical difficulty.
Printer issues.
So that means that I don't have a sound sheet in front of me. Matt, are you going to email me sound, or you emailed it to me? So I apologize. This is not good broadcast etiquette, but I'm going to look at my phone, and we're going to start with some sound. I, of course, am super excited about Anthony Scaramucci, and we'll be talking about him for most of the show, I'm sure. But let's start with basically what we have here. Let's start with the President Show. I think the President Show has been getting Trump better than anybody. And this is a clip from the last one of him meeting, with a couple of former mafia guys. Let's take a look.
Oh, I got leaks. Got a lot of leaks.
This is a big issue. This is with Comey. You know about Comey, the FBI director?
What's this thing you talked to him about?
But I saw. Well, the thing was, I said, listen. You're going to lay off, right? I just said, you're going to lay off. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying.
Oh, I know what you're saying.
He didn't get it at all.
I think you should have fired him right away. In the beginning.
Never trust the FBI.
Never trust
him. Never trust the FBI. That's the first rule.
I can't stand the FBI. the FBI is a bunch of jerks.
You could tell he was hanging out with us.
His father had a lot of good friends.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Who were some of my father's friends?
You can't share that?
Daddy helps me out once again. We have so much in common. My paisans. My pizones.
So what else do I need? Is there anything else that I need that I'm missing?
You listen. Pay attention. See, everything we do, it's about familia.
Right.
Everything.
I think it's important to keep your family close. But what about Melania? What if I want a new wife?
No. Okay. You don't understand. We were never allowed to get divorced.
No. That's the rule. Are you kidding me?
No divorce in that life.
Well, how did you, you know,
Well, you had your gamada on the side.
Yeah, friends with benefits. That's how
you say. A gamada on the side. A friend with benefits.
Friend with benefits. That's what you got to get.
So, like, my daughter?
What did you just
say? Shame on you.
You think it's time to go?
It's going to take a lot of work.
I think it's time. I'm done.
Having paid their respects, they decided to leave. But for those 4.5 minutes, we were kings.
I think that the President's Show with Michael, what is it, Michael Attaramic?
I can't pronounce it either.
But he has he just is catching the essence of Trump. Those are former real dudes. Those are all guys who used to actually be in the mafia. And I love the callback to his dad. It's perfect.
Yeah, I think that's the best Trump-related comedy bit I think we've seen in the administration so far. It's the new number one.
It is the new number one. I got to say this. We're at 361 on signups for the Michael Brooks Show. I'm incredibly appreciative of the first 361 people that have signed up. There's also some people who can't sign up at the moment but are promoting it. We're in the lab working on it. Fresh, Nation of Islam, Obama. A primer history of the third way. What was the third way and how it still infects our politics today. And we're planning out the first shows. So, you know, every membership obviously makes the show possible and sustainable. Check out the different membership levels at patreon.com/TMBS. And you can also watch the intro show, and we're posting a lot of different videos up there and impressions. I'm excited. I'm in touch with the crew, Anoa, Waz, Hannah, Alona, Corey. It's really, really exciting. And I just want to thank everybody again who's making that possible. We'll be right back with Ben Mankiewicz on the Majority Report.
And rap with me, yeah. You know, feel the reggae music.
Chronics, everybody. People always ask me the music pick. And I just saw him a couple weeks ago in Prospect Park, and I was very lit for that performance. Very good. Michael Brooks, of course, from The Majority Report. Joining us now is Ben Mankiewicz, Turner Classic Movies, The Young Turks. Ben, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you? I didn't understand two critical words in your reference to the music. One, I don't really know who Chronic is.
Right.
And
Chronics.
I don't know what lit means, and I don't get the whole thing. I'm 50. That's the way it goes. You turn 50, and this is what
I don't know what's happening. I don't know. Is that where is Marlon Brando movies? I don't know. I'm not at the Caribbean Music Festival. Hello.
Yeah, but I'm not proud of it. I feel the same way that I feel about great art, which I have no appreciation for.
Right? No appreciation.
My wife could hang a new painting on the wall. It would take 9 months. I know there, like, smart people appreciate this and know it, and I wish I knew it. I just don't.
I feel like your wife would appreciate good art. She seems like she would have good taste.
She does. Yeah. We got a lot. I think we have a lot of good paintings in the house. I really don't know.
Wait, so is it like a Rain Man thing with you, or just you just don't get it? You just don't see it even?
No, I just don't. I have no visual appreciation. I don't, like, it doesn't register, right?
Okay.
If it talked, I would know what it said. If it had lyrics, well, then I'm contradicting myself. But
this is where I want to press you a little bit, Ben, because I have given you a couple of different opportunities in various run-ins we've had together to get at least slightly more culturally literate, and you always take a pass. So I don't know how, you know, I don't know. I don't know how bad you really do feel.
No, I feel bad. I have a lot of things I feel bad about that I don't do anything about, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's not feeling bad and doing something to correct that is a sign of mental health that I don't have. So,
well, this is actually perfect intro to start talking about Democrats and healthcare.
Sure. Okay.
I feel bad, but I'm not sure I want to do anything about it. So, you know, the
that's
setup.
Right. That's,
yeah.
Right. That's exactly right.
So the setup is that, and I just want to say, I mean, I think as somebody who is obviously adamantly, like, to me, I mean, single payer is my compromise because I want an NHS, right? Like, that's where I am on healthcare. Mm-hmm. Politically, it was brilliant that they had a unified no, just like several years ago on Social Security privatization. And I think in the present political context, protect Obamacare is paramount. And you talk to any real serious policy people on the left, they'll say this goes in phases. And Republicans, by the way, are still lying about the CBO score and what their bill would do to millions of people's health care. So I just want to always kind of mention Republican sociopathy at the outset. But here is Chuck Schumer. He was on This Week with, I think it's Stephanopoulos, over the weekend, talking about where Democrats might go on broader economic issues and then healthcare specifically. We'll play the clip and then take it from there.
Beginning, week after week, month after month, we're going to roll out specific pieces here that are quite different than the Democratic Party you heard in the past. We were too cautious. We were too namby-pamby. This is sharp, bold, and will appeal to both the old Obama coalition, let's say the young lady who's just getting out of college, and the Democratic voters who deserted us for Trump, the blue-collar worker.
Some may wonder.
Economics, George, is our strength.
Some may wonder
if
it's
going to
be
at it.
Bold enough. I mean, even your New York colleague, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, talking about health care, says if you really want to get prices down, you have health care. Will Democrats unify behind single-payer health care?
Well, our economic agenda, we've talked so much about health care that we are not going to address that in this agenda. We've been talking about it. And let me just say, the first thing we're going to do I think that this the Trump care will not pass. It just is.
You think
rotten.
It's dead?
I think it's very unlikely to pass because it's rotten to the core. People are not for reducing taxes on rich people or getting rid of Medicaid, which is a very, very very middle class now thing, as well as for poor people. So the first things we're going to propose, if the and the Republicans hopefully will join us once they abandon this rotten bill, is some cost sharing, which the insurance companies say will help bring down premiums and stabilize the market. Something else that Republicans have often supported, which is reinsurance, proposed by Tom Carper and Tim Kaine. And Claire McCaskill's proposed something in the Bexar counties, B-A-R-E. You can, if you can't get insurance in those counties, you can get the same kind of health insurance we get. Then we're going to look at broader things. Single payer is one of them.
So that is on the table?
Medicare. Well, sure, many things are on the table. Medicare for people above 55 is on the table. A buy-in to Medicare is on the table. Buy-in to Medicaid is on the table. On the broader issues, we will start examining them once we stabilize the system.
Ben.
Yes. Is he still talking?
Yeah, Jesus, he really does, doesn't he? I mean, he's one of those guys that even if it's 50 seconds, it feels like an eternity.
Yeah, it feels long, right?
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, look, here's what's not on the table, single payer. That's what I take away from that.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, it's on the table, sure. That's what he says. Like,
right.
So what I'm curious about is what happens, because as always, I suspect that the mainstream of the Democratic Party, the establishment of the Democratic Party, doesn't appreciate the ferocity of the belief or interest of progressives.
Right.
So I'm just curious how they're going to react when that type of approach to healthcare, the middling approach to healthcare, is received poorly, and my hunch is it will be. I don't fault them for it. It's still progress. It's still better. And ultimately, when and if this country gets to single payer, it'll be a process. That was the process that began with Obamacare. That's what I and millions of other people thought then, and that's sort of still what I think.
Mm-hmm.
However, this sort of, first of all, any leader who uses the phrase namby-pamby within the first 6 seconds of his explanation about healthcare is not likely to appeal to the progressive movement. That's my sense.
Right. Right.
So I just think it's very, very tepid, and I'm curious how they'll react, because it could be rather, I think they were, I don't think they are appreciating, again, the ferocity of that movement, and I wonder whether they'll react to it. We saw in 2016 that they're, you know, that the establishment, whoever represents it, is slow to react to it, and I'm totally curious whether they'll be quicker.
Do you think that there's also just a problem? You know, thinking of how to articulate this, but I think that there's the kind of, you know, there's the for lack of a better term, and I don't necessarily accept these terms, but there's the left versus center argument inside the Democratic Party, or progressives versus center right, whatever. But then there's also just like, what time you're living in or not living in. And
right.
It also mm-hmm. strikes me that, you know, there's that when you're dealing with a Republican opposition that is basically with a Republican governing party that basically doesn't even take the rule of law seriously and has completely laid out an agenda which is, you know, ruthless and amoral and purely just a redistribution scheme for top-end earners. That's all it is. But it's actually quite cohesive, right? Like, you got the reason you got to destroy Obamacare is because you want permanent structural tax giveaways. The reason you want to, you know, rejigger the courts is so it can destroy labor unions, which frees up more money. Like, it works in a grid. And it seems to me
right.
that it's not just that these kind of, you know, the center proposals, some of them could be perfectly nice and nice little incremental improvements. Some of them might actually be, you know, bad ideas. I don't really know. But it's like you're responding to, like, you know, mafia war with, like, you know, PowerPoints still. So that there's this way in which it's not just the progressives are right on the merits. It's also like you're still not matching in the intensity or in the cohesiveness.
Look, this is a yes, that's true, and part of that is not having an over, you know, he thinks that what he just recounted there is some form of a bold new plan. We're certain that it isn't a bold new plan. We don't have bold new plans. We have become a party over the last 40 years since the shock. That would be my dog, Bob, who has a couple things to say about this, too.
Yeah, Bob is very adamant about, he wants Bernie to re-up for 2020. I've talked to Bob about
Bob does not think 79 is too old to be president of the United States. For crying out loud, Bob is 164 years old right now in human years. So.
Yes, and he'll still compete with younger dogs on any number of metrics.
So this is a become, and I don't say this as derisively as many do. This is a party of incrementalism. That's what it's become in sort of this 40 years of the still post McGovern loss shock. Right, man. We cannot talk that way. We cannot be that boldly aggressive. Right, and so, but there is a very big, very active, and very aware movement that I don't think they are still fully appreciating. Clearly, Hillary Clinton didn't fully appreciate her whole team. And I don't think that Chuck Schumer does either. But think about, like, how the – I mean, 4 years ago, 8 years ago, 12 years ago, George Stephanopoulos wasn't asking a single payer on the table, right? Chuck Schumer didn't think he had to give a pretend nod to single payer, certainly not with this kind of regularity.
Right.
Kamala Harris, who is clearly the darling right now of the establishment class, and that doesn't mean she would be a horrific pick, but she doesn't have a track record which progressives can object to, as big a track record as, say, Cory Booker does right now.
There's some objections said, to her, but yeah, she's not Cory Booker level. That's right.
But she has also, while there are some objections to her, it'd be easier for her to repair those objections, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's not baked in like it is with.
Well, sure, Cory Booker is made for 2005 and has never updated himself, and that's his problem.
Totally, we talked about that. But all these guys, if they have some political acumen, could shift that narrative, right? Mm-hmm. So far, I'm seeing not a great sign that Cory Booker wants to, but Harris's is so narrowly written that she could. Mm-hmm. But she said, I think last week, I'm completely I'm completely in support of single payer, but we've got to work out the details, and the details matter on that, which means in 12 years.
Right.
So to me, that's what that meant. But again, they're paying lip service to it, more than, maybe even a little more than lip service to it. And again, this is a process. So all of this tells me that certainly within your lifetime, young man, we'll get there.
Oh, I would like you to still be around for it, hopefully, Ben. I'll call you up. You'll be in Palm Springs somewhere, and I'll be like, "Hey, we got single payer, and Chronix's son is putting out an album." What? Who? Although I have Chronix, a feeling at that point, with some joint pain or something, that you might be lit.
Maybe by that point, I'd be lit.
I think you might be lit at that point. But now, being that as it may, let's have a little bit of fun and say goodbye to Sean Spicer. And with this new guy, I'm going to be talking I find an excuse to do the Tony Soprano thing any chance I get. And now with this Scaramucci guy, I have to say, how was he not Trump's spokesperson out of the gate? He's like the perfect Trump spokesperson. But let's take a little trip down memory lane. This was how Sean Spicer introduced himself to the world. He came out in not just an ill-fitting suit, but really like it's almost like a Men's Warehouse version of like, you're going to look fucking great. Like nobody could.
Michael, it wasn't an ill-fitting suit. It was somebody else's ill-fitting suit.
Exactly. It's like, what? Like, you don't have to know anything about this stuff to know that it just doesn't look right. Like, and I wonder if he almost had like a, it's like, did he have like a pair of like flip-flops on with that? Or no, it wouldn't even be that relaxed. He had a pair of like Doc Martens from like the early 90s on with them. This is how he introduced himself to the world. And then I want your thoughts, and I will share mine as we bid adieu to Sean Spicer.
Photographs of the inaugural proceedings were intentionally framed in a way, in one particular tweet, to minimize the enormous support that had gathered on the National Mall. This was the first time in our nation's history that floor coverings have been used to protect the grass in the mall. That had the effect of highlighting any areas where people were not standing, while in years past, the grass eliminated this visual. This was also the first time that fencing and magnetometers went as far back on the wall, preventing hundreds of thousands of people from being able to access the mall as quickly as they had in inaugurations past.
I mean, it's almost like he, and now looking back, I'm not going to defend him in any way, but that he thought, wow, if I have to tell a lie this aggressive, I need to talk really fast and really loudly, you know? and that will just get me through it. I'll just say, no, I don't know. I don't know that girl. I never met that girl. I did not go to dinner with her. What are you talking about? Right? It's just
more like I did go out with that girl. She had an incredible time. It was the best date of her life. Everyone says so. And anybody who says anything about roofies is totally lying. The angles of the drinks, you know, that was actually more what it was like.
Right. No, that's right. Yeah. That's right. That's better.
Yeah.
I just can't imagine. I don't know. I don't know what happened. I imagine that a lot of members of that White House press corps were, of course, glancing at each other like, what? I mean, because in day one, you could read. You could read, and it tells you what you needed to know about the Trump administration, if you somehow didn't already know, from the campaign and the transition, that these guys just, this was a totally different set of circumstances and a different level of lying. And anybody who comes back and says, well, all presidents lie, all administrations lie, all press secretaries lie, yeah, I suppose. This is a different degree, and it's not a different degree, it's 50 degrees more, right? I mean, it's just a... They're on a different level, and a great piece I think on Friday by John Nichols in The Nation, like, you know, as always in the, and I don't know whether it happened this weekend, but you know, the press loves a narrative that they can latch onto in Washington, and we love staff changes, right, and what they represent, even though frequently they
represent a big fucking improvement. I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself.
But we're gonna praise Spicer for quitting because he's gonna show up on Fox or CNN as a contributor, and he'll write a book and he'll make a lot of money, and there'll be sort of this narrative of, hey, this is the principled guy who quit, right? But he spent. There should be no principle ever tied to Sean Spicer. This is a guy who, as you just played there, from day one, told one gigantic lie after another. And lie isn't enough. We're inured to the meaning of the word lie, right? But I mean, one deliberate, misleading, propagandist falsehood. And he was horrible at his job, and I think the guy who replaced him might be worse.
Yeah, we're going to get to him in a second because I'm really excited about him. But I think that the thing about Sean Spicer is that in some ways he was the perfect, and I think other people have made this point, but he was always the kind of perfect distillation of the Trump administration in some ways, because he was just this incredible fusion of like belligerent, relentless, I mean, you know, lie about anything, anytime, anywhere, any place. But with the kind of like white knuckled, incompetent anxiety of morons. Right. I mean, just that kind of perfect grid of, you know, I started calling it during the primary. I said, it's clown fascism. And, you know, obviously Trump is a clown in a different way. But I mean, there was something about Sean Spicer's total cravenness, relentless incompetence, and just his, you know, palpable anxiety, not because he felt guilty about being such a horrible person, but because he was cognizant enough to know that his lying was ineffective. So that made him anxious and reactive. And I mean, you know, and Melissa McCarthy, you know, she nailed his essence out of the gate. And also, just to be clear, too, just to add on what you said, he's quitting because, you know, essentially he got demoted. He's not quitting out of any remote sense of principle. Yeah, zero principle. Right.
Yeah, the incompetence really came through. I like the sort of white knuckled incompetence. He was in over his head and over his home's ceiling and over the roof. I mean, he was deep buried in a job that he was not up to. There is going to be much less white knuckled incompetence from slick Scaramucci, right?
Yeah,
because
right.
He's comfortable in front of the camera.
I think I do a great fucking job.
So that'll be interesting. But again, that's what I know you'll get to it. But yes, there's an extra degree of and as always, I don't know if you have the clip, but I have the transcript. I mean, his thing with Jake Tapper yesterday, where he could not wait to tell America that he got a phone call from Air Force One.
Well,
that was all he wanted to do.
You know what? We do have two clips of him, and we have first the spiral football throw where he's basically like fellatioing Trump about his past athletic performance. And then actually, I will say in this other comment from Jake Tapper, I think Scaramucci is heralding a much greater level of transparency in the White House by, frankly, publicly insulting Sarah Huckabee's appearance. But let's start with this the spiral football thing. How was the Sopranos junk bonds guy not Trump's original spokesperson is completely beyond me. But anyways, let's watch this.
Here's what I tell you about the president. He's the most competitive person I've ever met. Okay, I've seen this guy throw a dead spiral through a tire. I've seen him at Madison Square Garden with a top coat on. He's standing in the key and he's hitting foul shots and swishing them. Okay, he sinks 3-foot punts. I don't see this guy as a guy that's ever under siege. This is a very, very competitive person. Obviously, there's a lot of incoming that comes into the White House, but the president's a winner. Okay, and what we're going to do is we're going to do a lot of winning.
This guy's amazing. All right, and here he is, Ben, because I just need, this is just like the perfect Scaramucci intro. He's talking with Jake Tapper, and after, getting all excited about getting a call from Air Force One, he's talking about a broader strategy to improve White House comms. This is, I think, where he's also talking about threatening to fire leakers, but he had some very specific comments about his new colleague, Sarah Huckabee. And if you'll just forgive me, Ben, I'm going to just take a couple of seconds after this to do a very offensive Guido impression, but I'm going to need to do that. And then I'll have
looking forward to it.
Yes, please. All right, here we go.
And my job, as I see it, Jake, is that these people work with me, and I'm there to serve them. If you think about the American military, the leaders eat last. If you think about the American military, the leader's job is to serve the people that are working alongside of them. And so me, for Sarah Huckabee, I want to do everything I can to make her better at that podium. I think she's phenomenal there now. But like every athlete that's training for the Olympics, every day we got to make ourselves incrementally better. The only thing I asked Sarah, if you're watching, I love the hair and makeup person that we had on Friday. So I'd like to continue to use the hair and makeup person.
All right, Anthony, you can always swing by CNN. We have hair and makeup here.
So I didn't realize. Hey, whoever did hair and makeup on Friday, I'm surprised we still got fags working in the White House. They did an incredible fucking job. I'm gonna want to keep them. Hey, well, hey, people say that we're not progressive about gender. That woman looked like a friggin' wildebeest, and whoever did it now, she looks like a normal mediocre 5.5 soccer mom from Omaha. Let's keep that up, Sarah. You're doing a great job. I'm a servant leader. I eat fucking last.
Yeah, that's very good. That's very, very solid.
All right, Ben, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm there to serve her. And he begins his privacy comments by insulting how she. I mean, it's just so bad, man.
Yeah, he's. I didn't. When I said he's going to be worse, I'm pleased that I was on the TYT on Friday's show. And there was some thought because, again, this guy's polished and, he looks good on CNBC or whatever he was on before, that he'd be better at this job. But this is a job, as it always was, this is a job for professionals, even in a runaway, mendacious administration like this one. And he is not a professional in any way about this. He's a bright guy, right? I mean, hey, he went to Tufts. Everybody who went to Tufts is a bright guy.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, he gives a black mark to Tufts graduates with. I just want to say
yes.
We're a proud group. it's a job for professionals, and he's not a professional. And that, I mean, I had not heard the hair and makeup comment. That is unbelievable. That is really
truly unbelievable. That is,
and he couldn't help himself. Like, he started to say she needed to get better, and then he caught himself, and he's like, she's doing a great job now, but I'm going to support her. yeah, I'm going to need that hair and makeup that we did on Friday because you looked way better. He couldn't help himself.
Hair and makeup, hair and makeup. So, I mean, but what's interesting, though, is don't you think, I mean, in the way this White House works, though, where everything is basically just an indirect internal communication to get back to Trump and feed his massive insecurities, narcissism, and instability, I feel like this guy's going to last for a while because there's an audience of one and he's tailor-made for it.
Totally. That's why Trump picked him. Trump saw him on cable and liked him. I mean, we've all seen the terrible things he said about Trump prior to
right.
when he was first supporting Walker and then supporting Bush. So, you know, Trump didn't see that.
No, Trump, so Trump did. And apparently he's acknowledged that he's had to apologize to Trump like 50 times.
For that. See, but yeah, but I mean, yeah. what Trump saw was a guy who defended right. him effectively on right. air. So he made him the head of communications. I mean, again, this is a job. This is a job for serious professionals, and there are plenty of serious Republican professionals who could do this job. I think most of them would be unwilling to. But they're
yes.
so that may be what where we're at is that you can't get a serious communications professional to do this because it is an impossible job to succeed at. So in that, but yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he won't last. I mean, no, right. again, normally he'd get fired today for that comment about the hair and makeup. Or but like, you know, I mean, again, and forgive me, I'm just so focused on this. But right before that, when he said he started off by telling Tapper, somebody told me yesterday, I won't tell you who, that if the Russians actually hacked this situation and spelled out those emails, you would never have seen it. You'd have no evidence of it because they're super confident in their deception skills in hacking. Right.
Hey, look,
and
the Russians are very fucking competent people. They don't leave a trail.
And Tapper interrupts, and he's like, well, you know, he's going to say that, you know, the four intelligence agencies all say that it was the Russians, and he's curious whether this is sort of an impartial intelligence expert, and Scaramucci can't help himself. And he goes, because Tapper says, I don't know who your source is, and then he goes, I tell you what, how about it was the president, Jake? He called me from Air Force One. Like, I was home, I got a phone call, I pick it up, Air Force One on the other end. President of the United States calling me on the phone. That's what happened.
Yeah. That's how went down.
Literally.
That's how it happened. And by the way,
the communications director, it took him 12 seconds to give up his source.
And by the way, yeah. I mean, who was the president? And by the way, that's an interesting.
It was the president, guy who said that very thing for now 9 months.
Wouldn't they have to have.
Because the thing he said 9 months ago, he said it again.
And by the way, why don't the Mulan Yangs calm down? We already had one as president. He said that too, Jake. The president on my phone at my home.
He has my cell phone. He has my home phone. Either one.
He's got the other
phone
too.
Call either one. I pick it up as the president's on a plane. Not just any plane, Air Force One.
Yeah, it's a fucking Air Force. You know what plane that is? Air Force fucking One. He's got the phone of my broad sister's friend. She keeps a phone too because I'm a hedge fund manager. Everybody's got phones around me because that's how we create jobs. I'm a servant leader. Everybody eats last. By the way, who was it? Who was the friggin' Liberace genius that made Sarah Huckabee not look like a friggin' pig?
Jesus.
Man,
that is... That is unbelievable. I had not. That is spectacular.
Isn't it? All right. So, there's a final couple minutes now. And speaking of which, somehow we get lost in all of this. The trust fund slumlord, baby himself, Jared Kushner, is apparently testifying in the Senate today. We have footage of him walking in, looking. I could just tell you from this footage, and you won't be able to see it, Ben, unfortunately. But the way he waves to the cameras, I'm guessing. Even in JCC basketball, not very good. Very physically uncoordinated looking Jared Kushner walking in to testify. Hello. Hi. And he's taking
Mr.
a question.
Mr. Kushner, do you regret that meeting at Trump Tower? Were your contacts with the Russians a mistake? Should you have been more cautious, sir?
Oh, I wish I could have you killed for my bat mitzvah. No, he didn't actually say that. What do you think? I mean, this is the whole other thread. I mean, they're every day about Kushner specifically. It feels like we're every week at least. I mean, there's the back channel with the Russian ambassador. There's a new report out today about a building deal that he was involved with a Russian oligarch. And doesn't that all the Russia stuff, I mean, that's always been my perspective on it, that it's really like it's an organized crime money laundering story. And of course, Jared Kushner's going to be at the center of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because, I mean, Middle East peace and the opioid epidemic and diplomacy with Mexico and diplomacy with China and reforming healthcare for veterans and the criminal justice system and reinventing government to make it work for business. Like, all those things need to take a back seat right now. Those are the seven things on Jared Kushner's agenda. That's what he's in charge of. And he can't do that when he's focusing on the Russia investigation. I'm much less interested in anything that happens in front of the Senate than what is happening with Bob Mueller's investigation, of
right.
course. And it's tough because we dig into these morsels of information every day, and we want to, and they're interesting, but they're going at their pace, and we have no idea what that pace is going to be, or of course, as we know full well, that pace might get interrupted by a firing of Rod Rosenstein, or, you know, he doesn't even need to fire Rosenstein. I mean, of course, remember, if a new attorney general comes in that isn't Jeff Sessions, that doesn't have to recuse himself, then Rod Rosenstein doesn't really, I don't think, retains any authority over right. that, so then whoever the new attorney general is would get to fire Mueller. But they'll go at their pace, and that might be 2 months, 6 months, or 14 months before they have something. But Jared Kushner, these guys are incompetence. These are political incompetence and not just their political incompetence, their policy incompetence. And they had no idea the rules that they might be breaking. So, you know, again, I'm not interested in any way, in fact, in what the Senate Intelligence Committee comes up with, because the real work, I imagine, is being done at the FBI.
Well, I think that's really exactly right. And my final question for you then, Ben, is that isn't this, though, where we, you know, and I, again, I'm not someone, I'm sort of somewhere in between, I guess, some of these arguments of like, hey, we already had a really corrupt and dysfunctional system. We did. And then at the same time, we're going to new depths here, and we need to recognize that. And one of the new depths that we're going to is that if he fires Mueller, so what? There is not a single Republican leader that's going to hold him to account for anything. So, I mean, isn't that kind of like the bigger danger, right? It's like the Republican Party
does not
care.
That's definitely the bigger danger.
Yeah.
They don't care, and they, you know, they're making a case with the conflict of interest, and they don't even have to make a good case, right? And a new attorney general get approved by the Senate, and yeah, they don't care. Now, again, there's still stories that could, you know, it will change in 2018, right? As we get closer to 2018, and that campaign revs up, and some of those members feel themselves in jeopardy, that 37-38%, if he drops 35-34%, and they recognize that there's more political capital to be gained by distancing themselves from him, then maybe there'll be a couple. But
He's still popular with Republicans.
And that's who he's governing. But again, those numbers start dropping. Some of the leaders betray him because there's political capital and there's being able to survive this legally. The political capital could. He's not immune to politics, not completely. He may be governing to this 37%, but he can't continue governing to 29%.
Well, hope springs eternal. Ben Mankiewicz, obviously I look forward to having you many more times on the Majority Report and on the forthcoming Michael Brooks show.
That's what everybody's talking about here in America, the Michael Brooks show. It's trending on Twitter.
And I got a call about it.
But it might one day.
I got a call one day.
All right, Michael, thanks.
It was from Ben. All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Talk to you soon.
All right. We will be going into the fun half, everybody, where you can join the conversation at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. Become a member of the Majority Report today. It's less than a cup of coffee a day. Nominate us for Best News in Politics at podcastawards.com. We won it 4 times. We need to win it 5, and we need to win it with Matt and Kelly on staff.
Yeah, don't let us down.
Yeah, it's frankly embarrassing.
I don't like losers. What's that when Trump was in Ohio? It's like, what's wrong with the people of Ohio?
No, it was Iowa. What's wrong with the people of Iowa? I think they gotta be stupid.
In front of Ted Cruz?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we have plenty more sound, plenty more stories. The IMs are on. Thanks again to everybody who signed up so far for the Michael Brooks show. I'll convey my full appreciation by producing a really good show with you, along with Matt and David. All right, everybody. See you in the fun half.
Sad.